making dreams come true.
Welcome to the spooktacular version of the 411. I'm Chris.
I'm Michelle. This is weird. This is weird already.
I'm Marcus.
Don't act like you guys don't love me. You're stuck with me, though. So, anyways, since 'tis the season, we're talking trick-or-treating. And so we're going to do a little hypothetical treat situation. So we're going to pretend that we are in a school with some decent technology. You've got computers. But if you wanted to take that learning to the next level, where would you invest? You know, so the hypothetical is you've just won a grant for a decent amount of money to take your learning to the next level. Where do you invest? Where do you invest?
What I want to do is I want to actually start at the classroom level first. We're presuming that we have one-to-one devices, whatever the devices are, in our building. I really like the idea and the concept of having multiple types of devices available to students. So beyond that one-to-one. So in my case at Twin Lakes School Corporation, we're one-to-one with Chromebooks. I love Chromebooks. That's not the topic though. But what I would like is, you know, in an ideal world, to have other types of devices available, whether they're on carts, whether there's, you know, additional sort of mobile units available, so that we can give students experience with different types of devices and not just have them pigeonholed with one, whether it's iPad or MacBook or Chromebook or PC, whatever it is. So I think I'd start there with maybe just instituting some mobile carts with different devices than what the students are using as their individual device. That's where I'd start.
That's interesting that that's what you would do. I think I would go kind of an opposite route. I think I'm all about bringing in different devices, but I think there's a lot of potential with BYOD there. I think digital content is where it's at. I think that teachers, as teachers, we spend a lot of time Googling and searching and trying to sift through massive amounts of content to find something that's high quality to use with our students, that if we can provide it at district level, repositories of high quality content that isn't going to go down, that is tagged with in a searchable way, that makes it simple for teachers to go to one place to find digital content to build some really cool learning experiences. I think that is where I would probably prioritize investing money over additional hardware. So that's kind of interesting that we came at it from two different approaches.
I'm gonna make a third approach because for one, I don't know that I would trade in my one-to-one. But I would want to invest in ways, maybe the opposite of content, as crazy as that sounds. You know, I think content in a way is, you know, with the technology, the content is out there and is sort of limitless. I get the efficiency and all of that, but I think it's more important that students are able to, you know, the four C's to collaborate and to critically think and communicate and create. And so I would invest where my students are going to be able to do that. And so, you know, whether it's tools for programming and coding and, you know, to still utilize the content, but in a way that allows them to interact more as opposed to just be around the curriculum, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So my brain is like, my brain hurts. Okay. So Michelle, I actually really like that as well. I made a concerted effort to say I would start, because I'm totally with you on the digital content and, you know, having those options for kids. I don't know how many kids are like, oh my gosh, this is so great. It's so efficient that I have this place and teachers get this great digital content from this resource that we pay for. No, they probably don't. But I completely agree with you. Chris, I completely agree with you in the engagement element as well. But I think what you just did, my friend, is you just opened up a can of worms.
I guess the danger in this conversation is that we're talking about stuff. And even digital content. I mean, I know that's probably not like the most exciting answer, but really I feel so strongly about that because I think about active learning environments and I think about creating opportunities for students to learn that are personalized and that are blended and meeting students' needs where they are. And ultimately that requires a lot of digital content. It requires rethinking the teacher's role in a classroom as not being, you know, standing in front of the room lecturing. So we have to utilize online learning, and we need to have enough resources available so that we can meet students where they are. I think it's less about, wow, this is the most exciting, you know, having a kid look at a piece of digital content and thinking, wow, this is really entertaining and fun. And more about being able to transform what learning looks like in the classroom. And ultimately, I think technology becomes the conduit for that. And having a rich repository of digital content allows us to rethink what instruction can look like. So that is why I'm still standing by my response.
And see, I don't disagree at all in the idea that the role of the teacher has changed. But I, you know, if we think about what we're preparing the kids for, you know, is to be successful in the future. And, you know, we talk about how we're preparing kids for jobs that are not yet created and we don't know what those jobs are. So we don't have to prepare kids for just a future. We need to prepare kids for futures, plural. And I think we, you know, education is shifting away from, you know, it's important that they know the content. Content matters for test scores and, you know, it's not like kids need to know nothing. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is there's some soft skills that will take them much further than whether or not they can, you know, correctly identify the third phase of mitosis, for example. So content is important, but I just place a higher priority in some of those soft skills, like the four C's, like I talked about. And so that's why I will stand by my answer. We need to attack Marcus, though, because somehow he's like being safe.
All right, so I wanted to start by investing in a variety of devices to give students different experiences. And Michelle brought up a great point about digital content. So my question to you guys then is this. We have improved things in our buildings in this scenario. What are we going to do to really take things to the next level? What are we going to do with the rest of this fictitious money? How are we going to continue this trend that we're building? We're starting with some basics. What's the next step?
dollar bills. I didn't realize that's so much money. Okay, so now I'm excited. I talked about preparing kids for the futures. So I want a variety of devices. I talked about programming. It depends on grade level, but I will take either an HTC Vive, some virtual reality. I will take some programmable drones. I will take Sphero, some Makey, some creation tools so my students are creating and able to build to sort of prepare for futures.
Okay, so we started with the treats and now we're into the tricks. I'm going to start by saying I don't disagree that there is definitely a place for augmented reality, for virtual reality, certainly for computer science, and that there are a lot of cool gadgets out there that can make that kind of learning possible, and that's great. However, I do think that they are often more of a trick than a treat, because I think we get so fixated with the stuff again, with bringing in stuff and gadgets and cool things that when people come and do walkthroughs of our buildings, they're going to be so impressed. Oh, look at this 3D tool that we're using. Look, our kids are making stuff out on the 3D printers and they're rolling a Sphero around the room. But then I feel like too often we stop there at surface level, and what you see in a room is we're not actually coding the Sphero. We're playing the game that comes on the app and moving it around, and that's fun and that's engaging. And engaging in a like entertaining kind of way. And we're printing in a 3D printer, and oh, isn't that impressive? But really, our kids aren't designing anything. They found an already made design. Someone else designed it, and they're just gonna print it. And I think too often that those gadgets just fall into that category. And so if we're not really thoughtful, I think they end up being more detrimental than helpful. So I'm not saying that they're not great. I'm not saying that they can't be used really well. I'm saying that too often they're not, and so they can trick you.
Man, give me my brain back. I'm listening to Michelle talk, and I'm nodding my head. And that was exactly the point that I wanted to get a chance to say is the misuse. Like, we hook kids in and engage them with the next cool thing, but like you said, Michelle, we end up playing the game, not doing the coding. We end up printing the stuff, not designing. And that's why I get bummed out when I see so much money, back to our budget, being dumped into technology that I feel like is going to end up being misused or is going to sort of fizzle for the kids. It's going to be super cool for a while, and then it's going to just be like, that again. That's probably a whole other episode that we could probably talk about. But I am so on board with what you said there about that.
You know what, Michelle? I actually kind of agree with you there. I'm with Marcus. However, though, I will say, you know, I don't think that, and you weren't saying this either, but I don't think we then don't have those tools, because like I mentioned earlier, when the focus is more on those soft skills like critical thinking, you know, you're not just playing the game, you are coding, because the game doesn't require critical thinking, the coding does. And so when the focus is on those really important soft skills to prepare kids for the futures, then the tools are successful. So I've really enjoyed this conversation, and if you guys are good with it, let's take it a little bit further with the Halloween talk, and tell me, what's your favorite candy? Any tips, tricks? What do you give out? Let's talk some Halloween.
That is a big, big question, sir. I'll say this. If it's not chocolate, I'm not interested. You can keep your sweet tarts, you can keep your Skittles, you can keep your pixie sticks, your suckers, your dum-dums, your blow pops, your bubble gums, your bazookas, your now and laters. You can keep all of that. If I have my way, it's nothing but chocolate. And that's just we're just tip of the iceberg. You've opened up a can.
First things the first. Does this look like a witch hat? No, it looks like a shark fin. Well, no one accused me of being an artist. Anyway, so chocolate or bust, huh? I don't give out candy. I make little treat bags with only non-candy, like vampire teeth and slime and activity books and Halloween pencils. I'm sure I'm gonna get backlash for this.
Boo! I want candy. That's awful. Like, and I've even got the cool teeth. But I'm with Marcus. Give me the candy.
Okay, so I do this because I love it so much, and I was such a weird kid. I know that's hard for you guys to imagine that I was a weirdo, but I was. And when I was trick-or-treating, my favorite places were the ones where I would get that kind of stuff. Like, give me a Halloween pencil and a Halloween eraser, and I was the richest girl in town. So I make these little treat bags for the nerdy little Michelles that come to my door. They're out there. The rest of the kids are probably mad that they didn't get a Snickers, but there's at least one kid every night that is very excited for this little treat bag, so I'm not going to apologize, and I'm not going to change.
Hey guys, after we're done trick-or-treating, let's eat a bunch of that awesome chocolate candy, and then let's go egg that lady's house. Huh? Who's with me?
Sorry, Michelle. Even though, like, props for your drawings tonight. Like, that was awesome. I'm Team Candy. And for me, it doesn't get better than the Reese's. Specifically, the Reese's Pumpkin. It is the second greatest Reese's invention behind the Reese's egg, the Easter egg. The chocolate to peanut butter ratio is divine. Reese's has got Halloween on lockdown, though. I'm not sure if you saw, but Reese's did a thing where they had a candy exchange. So it was like this vending machine, and it said, like, you enter your disappointment candy in, and then it would dispense Reese's cups, and they proclaim themselves the GOAT of Halloween, the greatest of all time, and I'm not going to disagree. However, this is very important. A Reese's that has been next to that nasty fruit candy that Marcus talked about, like the Skittles, somehow the flavor absorbs, and I want people that are hearing this to comment, because I can't be the only person. The flavor of that fruit absorbs through the bag and gets into the Reese's, and it tastes like a fruit Reese's, and it's disgusting. Reese's needs to figure that out. I think it's because the chocolate is so pure and delicious that it must be separated. That's the only explanation I can give, but they need better packaging to prevent the nasty, I don't know if it is Skittles or something, leaks through and gets into the Reese's.
You know, you could avoid all of this sadness if you just go to Michelle's house and trick-or-treat, because then you get, you know, some Halloween post-it notes, some Dracula teeth, some slime, and a pencil. So you wouldn't have to worry about any of that god-awful chocolate.
Would now be a bad time to say I think peanut butter and chocolate together is pretty disgusting? Yeah? I'm a weirdo. Man, I really hope no one's putting my Halloween pencils in the Reese's vending machine. Man.
And with that, I just can't. This episode, it's a wrap.
And that's the 411. Mwah.